Here's what's coming up on today's episode of Your Tagline Here.
This is called Fortunately, Unfortunately. So I'm going to make a statement starting with the word fortunately.
Okay.
You're going to respond with unfortunately. So whatever I present you with, you're going to present a negative twist to it.
Okay.
So I will start with, fortunately, I found a parking space right outside here tonight.
Unfortunately, it's covered with dog poo.
Fortunately, I love the smell of dog poo.
Unfortunately, it brings in seagulls to the area.
Fortunately, seagulls make excellent snacking if you cook them right.
Unfortunately, they have a nasty habit of exploding in the oven.
Fortunately, my oven is under warranty because it's fairly new.
Unfortunately, it's a warranty from Japan, which means I have to take the oven there myself.
Fortunately, the Olympics are on, so I get a chance to see them. And see. Okay.
Hello, and welcome to the 11th episode of Your Tagline Here. In this episode, I talk to John Trevor, who is responsible for the Box of Frogs improv group, who perform high-octane improvised comedy at theatres and events around the country. Birmingham Improv, which offers workshops, classes and drop-ins for all levels of experience for people to learn and practice improv. And also the Improv Initiative, which uses improv to teach communication and teamwork skills to corporate organisations. On top of that, he's also the mastermind behind the Birmingham Improv Festival, which has been running annually since 2016, although it has understandably been forced to take a break due to the COVID pandemic. During this episode, I find out what improv is, how it can help people to develop a whole range of different skills, and we also play a few games together to demonstrate what it's all about, which was loads of fun. Before we get into the episode, I would just like to mention our sponsor, KitLab, which is a digital marketing company based in Birmingham in the UK. KitLab have over 15 years experience and they specialise in branding, websites, digital marketing, social media and more. So if you want to grow your business online, just head over to kitlab.com, which is KIKLAB.com. Okay, without further ado, let's get into the episode and meet John. If you do like the episode, then make sure that you give us a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel to make sure you don't miss out on any future content. Hello, John. Welcome to the podcast. It's good to have you here.
It's great to be here. Thanks for asking me.
No, I'm really looking forward to this episode because I have been along to quite a few of your improv sessions in the past. I did a course that was over quite a few weeks and then I came to some of your drop-in sessions and I've really enjoyed doing improv in the past. So it's good to share that with some new people. So first of all, can you just explain what is improv?
Well, yeah, good question. It covers quite a broad spectrum of activity, but basically it's people on stage performing with no script, making it up as they go along, working as a team. It's a collaborative art form, so it's art by committee. It's a group of people making up stuff. Most people's experience of improv is in the comedy world, so making up scenes, sketches, songs in the moment, often based on audience suggestions.
Yeah, and all of the stuff that I've seen in the past has been comedy, I think. Is there a lot of improv that happens which isn't comedy-based?
Not a lot. There are people trying to produce improvised theatre, so like an hour-long narrative theatre piece. I think even if you do that, inevitably there will be humour in there. It's almost impossible to avoid. The comedy of improv is very different from the comedy of stand-up, and it's normally based on either recognition or surprise, and in a way you can't help that happening.
Yeah, and from my own experience of doing it and from watching it as well, some of the funniest bits are the bits that just happen by accident. It's not stuff that anyone has planned or tried to do. It's just the accidental stuff that happens.
There's a lot of accidents, and we talk about accidents being gold, mistakes being the golden stuff. Because you Those are the things that take you off. You used the term off-piste earlier when we were chatting. Those are the things that take you off-piste. And that's when you get to explore a whole new territory because something's changed that you weren't expecting to happen.
Yeah, so let's go off-piste now. And can we try a game together to sort of demonstrate it to other people as to exactly what it is? So have you got a game that we can play as a pair?
Absolutely. Not easy, not a problem. This is one of the easiest exercises we can do, but it also contains within it all the elements of improv because we're going to work collaboratively.
Okay.
Neither of us can control the outcome. It's going to take both of us to make it happen, and the end result will be something that neither of us is going to expect or could plan.
Okay.
And it's really simple. We're going to tell the first few lines of a story together, okay, but we'll do a word at a time each.
Okay.
So I'll say a word, you'll say a word, I'll say a word, and we'll see where it takes us. Okay. Once
upon a time,
there
was
a
bear
who
growled
angrily
at
everyone
because
he
was
hungry
for
acorns.
The
acorns
were
not
very
fruitful
to
alleviate
the
bear's
pain.
He
found
a
strawberry
pudding
on
the
floor
and
he
proceeded
to
eat
the
pudding
fast.
And
with
gusto.
Okay.
Good. So we've done the first two lines of the story. Who knew it was going to be about a bear eating strawberry pudding?
Oh, exactly. And I think that is a really good example and a very simple demonstration of what you can do. And actually, it's something that people can do themselves.
Oh, yes. It's endlessly entertaining.
If ever people are bored of just talking and making conversation between themselves, let's play an improv game.
Car journeys. Perfect.
Yeah. And I used to do that sometimes with friends in a pub. What's there one called where you have to say five things with a particular topic?
Yeah, name five things.
Yeah.
And that we tend to encourage speed rather than accuracy.
Yeah.
When it's done as a group, we sort of shout the number out after each one.
Yes.
And there's no wrong answer. So, you know, if I say to you five things you wouldn't want to find under your bed, then you'd go...
Rats.
Yep.
Poo.
Two.
Nails.
Three.
Porn.
Four.
Nurses.
Five. And you see, now, you didn't know nurses was going to come out of your mouth.
No. And I really like that because I think that sometimes, and I'm very guilty of this, is I try to prepare what I'm going to say and I try and make it perfect. And one of the things that I really liked when I did do improv with you was it was like training myself to be a lot more spontaneous and to just deliver whatever the conveyor belt in my brain delivers rather than having to make everything perfect.
I truly believe, A, that everyone is much more creative than they imagine, and that your unconscious mind is infinitely creative.
Mm.
It can't help but make connections, produce weird things. I mean, look at the dreams it produces. And the main problem is that the prefrontal cortex, the bit at the front, wants to edit all the time, edit and control. But if you learn to let go of that, new and interesting stuff comes out, like nurses under your bed.
So I know that I know that doing improv is just a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
And like I've mentioned, it can help to sort of train ourselves to be less planning about things and just be more spontaneous. Are there other benefits that doing improv will have for people?
About a million. So if we're talking about people in everyday life, it's good for confidence. It's good for improving your listening because the only thing we have on stage is what each other say and do.
Mm.
And so if you're not noticing what each other say and do, if you're lost in your own head, it's not going to work. So it teaches presence. It teaches emotional intelligence because you've got to read each other. It teaches teamwork. It teaches leadership and on and on and on and on. It's a huge bundle of transferable skills.
I think it is a great thing to do for fun and also to develop ourselves. So I would really encourage people out there, if they haven't tried it before, then find your local improv group. And if you're in Birmingham, then look up for Box of Frogs.
Yeah, or Birmingham Improv. I'll talk about the brand.
Yeah, let's go into that a little bit later. So first of all, I just want to explore your improv journey and how you got involved in it, first of all, why you got involved. The questions.
Okay.
How and why?
So, in a previous existence, I was a theatre director.
Okay.
For a long time. And I used bits of improv in the rehearsal room occasionally, but never as a performance. So the actors will often use improvisation as a way of maybe developing character, but there's a difference between doing that and standing in front of an audience and creating something watchable. So I knew a bit about it. I gave up the theatre in 2000. I burnt out, as people tend to in those kind of worlds. And for 8 or 9 years, everything was fine. And I was happy doing what I was doing. And I just started to miss that thing eventually after 8 or 9 years. I'd read a book on improv, and it looked like fun, and it sounded like fun. So I looked around Birmingham for a class or a workshop or something, and there was nothing. This is 2009, and there was absolutely nothing. I couldn't believe it. So I did the ridiculous thing, which was print up a load of flyers.
Okay.
And offered to teach a workshop, having never done it. I know, but
which,
I read a
which
book.
Is very brave. Well, reading a book is more than the other people. So at least you're one step ahead of them.
I was one book ahead of ahead of everybody else.
But I'm sure also your experience in theatre in general helped massively as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely, and of course I have to add, since then I have been on lots of training courses, and done lots of workshops with other people. I got a slightly better grasp of what I'm doing now. But that was my introduction, and that was 11, 12 years ago.
Okay.
And I just started teaching on a one night a week, doing a workshop. And after a year or two, people said, shouldn't we be performing this? And I was like, oh, okay. And so some of us started doing gigs in upstairs in bars and just, you know, parts of other people's cabaret. And then gradually out of that, Box of Frogs grew to be a thing.
Okay, so yeah, let's just go into the branding now, because I know that you've got Box of Frogs and Birmingham Improv. And also Improv Initiative.
Yes.
So let's go. What is Box of Frogs, first of all?
Okay. So Box of Frogs was just anything I did for many years. Okay. I just called everything Box of Frogs. And it became quite a muddy, confused brand. So I've used the pandemic, because nothing was happening for a year, I used that as an opportunity to rebrand. So Box of Frogs refers to a performance group. And it's a fixed group of people. Fixed as in, you know, people, we take on new people occasionally and people leave occasionally, but it's a fixed group of people who perform comedy in clubs, theatres, wherever we're booked. And we've got, you know, half a dozen bookings between now and the next couple of months.
Okay, so now theatres are open again,
yeah.
Then you're able to go in and perform at them.
Absolutely. So we've got 3 nights at the Stroud Festival.
Okay.
We've got a night coming up at the Glee Club in Birmingham and stuff like that.
Oh.
So that's Box of Frogs.
Okay.
Everything else I do comes under the umbrella of Birmingham Improv.
Okay.
So Birmingham Improv is actually a CIC. It's a community interest company that offers workshops, drop-ins, teaches classes, does anything it can to promote performance improv.
So if people want to learn how to do improv, they can go to the Birmingham Improv website, and there's workshops and drop-ins available for people to
Correct.
Go along to.
At the moment, there's just drop-ins on a Monday night, because we're just literally just starting up from the pandemic. So as soon as we could, we started meeting in the park and doing workshops.
Okay.
That's faded now as indoors has opened up. So at the moment, there's just Monday night drop-ins. From September the 16th, I'm going to be teaching a structured course like you did at the Midlands Arts Centre. That will be a 12-week structured course with a possibility of a show at the end if people want to do it.
Okay.
And that'll be running 3 times at the Mac over the course of a year.
If people want to go along to a drop-in, for example, are drop-ins okay for people who have never done it before?
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay. So yesterday, what are we on today? Monday, 4 new people showed up that I'd never seen before.
Okay.
And it was fine. We just look after everybody.
Yeah, and that's something that I found by going to the drop-ins. It is very welcoming for new people. So you get a little bit of guidance if you've never done it before.
And if people want a more structured course, then they can come to a 12-week and you actually do get taken through all the steps of how to get good or how to approach improv.
Yeah, and it's really nice that you can do it with all mixed abilities. So it's not just beginners and advanced, it's everyone doing it together.
Yeah, I mean, depending on who shows up, I'll tend to tailor what we're doing to be more challenging or less challenging, or, you know, I don't want to scare people off on their first visit, and I don't want to bore people who've been doing it for years.
So
it's always finding a balance between the two.
And if people do come along to a drop-in, what could they expect to experience? Because I'm sure that there's a lot of people that might want to go to improv, but they're a little bit scared because they don't have a clue what it would actually involve.
Yeah. We teach improv through games, through play. And the great thing about play is everybody knows how to play. In fact, without getting too anthropological about it, all mammals play.
Okay.
And that's how mammals learn and how they socialise. And humans are no different. We play to learn and we play to socialise and to groom each other so that we get on with each other. And we all know how to play. But we play games with a purpose that teach us certain skills. So we just played the word game. So we'll play games like that individually, in pairs, in a group, that teach skills. And then each week I'll pick a topic that we'll look at, and I'll play some games that lead us towards that topic, and then we'll do some exercises and maybe bits of performance that use that. So I might do an evening where we just all play with gibberish. So there's no real words, everything's just vocal noises, and we do scenes or we talk to each other and just practice gibberish.
Can we have a go at a game that involves gibberish?
Yes, this is what's going to happen.
Okay.
You're going to be a visiting lecturer, and I'm going to be your translator because you don't speak English. So you're going to give a lecture on the use of, I can see some folders over there, the use of folders as a weapon of war.
Okay.
So you're going to give the lecture, you're the learned professor, I'm going to be your translator for the English speaking audience.
Okay.
If you'd care to start, Professor.
Bubble, 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 bubble.
Welcome, everybody.
You
might think folders are boring, but I've made a decent living out of them. My mother told me this was the way to go. And she was right, because not only are folders interesting, but they are a lethal weapon.
Papa.
However, always make sure you are wearing your protective clothing before picking up a lethal folder, or you could hurt yourself. Well, that's enough for now.
Okay. Thank you. That was good fun.
But let's just talk about it. So
okay,
we had to work together.
Yeah.
I was looking at what you were doing and the emotion with which you were doing it.
Okay.
And trying to translate it, but not necessarily completely accurately. So I would throw in spanners back to you, which you would have to react to.
Okay.
So I would say, you know, I brought your mother into it and gave warnings, and you had to change what you were doing to make sense of what I said, and I had to change what I said to make sense of what you were doing.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And I was trying to focus my communication with my body language and my facial expressions and my vocal tonation, because I was trying to give you something to work with when I wasn't actually saying any words.
And the great thing about gibberish is it frees people up to do exactly that. People tend to be more expressive, more physical, more emotional, because they're not locked in their prefrontal cortex trying to think of the right words to say.
Mm.
So it releases everything, which is why you know, it's a great exercise to do.
Yeah. What are some other topics that you would focus on different drop-ins?
Status, how different people interact in terms of status, masters, servants, bosses and workers, all of that. Just focus on stage. So several people on stage and passing the focus carefully from one person to the next so that the audience know where to look and who to listen to. Use of silence. We don't have to keep talking all the time. So I've had whole evenings where we barely say anything, but we do stuff on stage and we watch each other. So loads and loads and loads of stuff. Rhyming. We could do a whole evening of poetry, improvised sonnets. I mean, there's no end to what you can make up.
Oh, I wasn't expecting that.
That was the coffee machine.
That's going to go for a few seconds. So we'll just let it go before we start again. So what I'd like to ask you now is, we've talked about the drop-ins, and you said that you also run structured courses.
Well, a course, yes.
Over 12 weeks. How does that work? What's covered in that? Is it...
Well, similar stuff, but it's done in a way that assumes you know nothing in the first week.
Okay.
The first week will just be spent getting to know each other and understanding some of the basics of how to collaborate. People think they know how to collaborate, but they don't. And then gradually we'll work as a group to just look at the different skills. So there'll be, again, a week. One session will be on silence. One will be on playing the kind of games we've played. One might be on character.
One thing that I did definitely like about doing the structured course was that we were all at the same level.
Yeah.
It was tailored for people who have never done it before, and it felt like a really nice, safe way of learning it. And not that going to a drop-in workshop isn't a safe way of doing it, but it felt nice. And it was also good because it was the same group of people every week going back. So I built some nice friendships out of it as well, which was definitely a big bonus.
Because we get to play together as a group of people, and there's no better way to build a friendship than to be playful with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So now I want to find out about your third brand, which is called the Improv Initiative.
Yes.
What is that all about?
So that's a corporate improv business.
Okay.
So we've talked about the skill set of listening, working together, following each other, leading each other, being collaborative. That translates just beautifully into any corporate organization, and it's much needed. So I go into businesses, I go into organizations, and I run similar kinds of workshops, but instead of it being for fun, it's to develop a set of skills. So between each exercise, we talk about what have we just learned, and how can we apply it, and what use is it in terms of making a business run more effectively or making a team run more efficiently. So that's what it is. And I belong to an international organization called the Applied Improvisation Network, which is what it says. So what we do on stage is pure improv.
Okay.
And what I do in businesses is applied improv, applied improvisation, taking that skill and applying it to the business world. And it's amazing how many people come to my workshops, drop-ins or classes, and then go, gosh, this stuff's really interesting. I don't suppose you ever do it with organisations, do you? And I go, funny, you should say that. Here's my website. And I end up going to their businesses and running sessions so that people can learn those skills.
I think it's a great way of doing it because I worked in the corporate world for about 20 years, and I went on lots of different training courses in lots of different things, including communication. And most of the training that I had was quite dull and boring, and I don't really remember that much about it. So I think learning those communication skills, which are really important in the corporate world to make sure that people are working effectively well together as teams, doing it in a fun way like improv means that people are actually more likely to remember it and more likely to use it. And I also imagine that it's a great way of just team building in general.
Yeah. So it's fun anyway. So people are having fun together. But in all my training work, because I do other kinds of training as well, I do presentation skills and interpersonal stuff, my abiding motto is you can't learn to swim in the library. Okay. So books can only take you so far. You have to jump in and splash about and do the stuff. And everything I do in terms of training is experiential. So it's all very well to talk about how are we a team, but you have to do it. Mm. And so we set up improv challenges that involve working as a team. And I don't want to take us too far off piece, but I've got a whole theory about that there's a difference between teamwork and collaboration.
Okay.
And people don't necessarily know which one they're doing, and that can cause problems within teams and groups because some people think they're doing one and some people think they're doing the other.
Okay. So I know we are going off piece, which is okay, but it's something that I'm interested in. Can you explain briefly what the difference is between collaboration and teamwork?
Well, I'll give you two examples that I think really clarify. So a Formula One pit crew is teamwork.
Okay.
And they are the pinnacle of teamwork because they can change four wheels in under 2 seconds. So a team has a fixed goal. They know what they're trying to achieve. So there's KPIs, there's measurable performance indicators that you know how you're doing because the quicker you do it, the faster the wheels get on the car.
Yeah.
Everybody has a job. Everybody knows what their job is. There's usually somebody in charge measuring all of this stuff and checking whether they're doing it right. And you can practice and practice and get better and better. That, for me, is brilliant teamwork. A jazz band is a collaboration.
Okay.
Nobody's in charge. I'm talking about a true jazz band, not bands that play jazz standards from sheet music. A real jazz band, nobody's in charge. They're listening to each other. It's going to go somewhere unpredictable. There's no fixed end point that they're looking to achieve.
Okay.
They're exploring together to find something that nobody could have done alone. Like you and I did when we did the word game.
Okay.
It's true collaboration. There's no, nobody has a fixed role. Everybody's working together. Sometimes one person's leading, sometimes another person's leading. Somebody has a solo, does a filler, and we have to decide all together when it's reached the end and when we've achieved something. So two very different activities. Mm. But if you're in a team and you think you're collaborating and every time you make a suggestion, you get told to shut up because you're in a team and you've got a fixed job, doesn't work. If you're collaborating and somebody thinks they're in charge and should be telling everybody what to do, doesn't work.
I've not really thought about that before, but you are absolutely right. And there is a big difference between those two types of working together, and it is important to know which one you're doing.
So when I do corporate stuff, I give people an experience of both. I give them a team exercise to do, and I give them a collaborative exercise to do, and then you can feel the difference. You can actually experience the difference of the two things.
So when you started the improv initiative, was that something that happened by accident because people were coming to you asking for it? Or was it something that you deliberately wanted to put together and started putting out there?
A bit of both, more the second. So I came across the Applied Improvisation Network. I'd already done a lot of training work in the gap when I'd stopped being a theatre director. I'd already done a lot of presentation skills, a lot of customer service stuff. So a lot of stuff that involved people working together or communicating. I came across the AIN and realised there were other people doing what I'd been thinking about. This country is much less advanced in terms of applied improvisation. So in the States, all the big improv schools like Second City have a corporate wing and companies come to them the time and ask for stuff. In Europe, it's very well known. Here in the UK, on my website, I wrote a blog that sort of sums up some of the British attitude to applied improvisation. And I titled the blog that sort of tells you what the answer is. And the title of the blog is, "No thanks, we've got enough comedians here already," which is a sort of typical British corporate attitude. So if I approach companies and go, "Hi, would you like me to come in and do some applied improv?" That's the kind of response I normally get.
Okay.
So most of it happens by people coming to my workshops and realizing the power.
So
I've done quite a lot of work in the NHS. I was doing a load of work with the Walsall Manor Hospital until pandemic stopped it all. I used to do stuff with Heart of Birmingham when it existed. So and I've worked in, I'm trying to think, I worked with the Enterprise, the Birmingham and Solihull Enterprise people. Yeah, people come and ask.
Yeah, and I can see how going out to businesses, you might get sometimes not the nicest response that you would want, because people have a perception about what it is, and they might think, oh, well, yeah, we don't want any of that. But if people have actually been through the experience themselves, then it helps to drive it from inside the organisation to come to you.
Absolutely.
Rather than you trying to push it out to people.
If you haven't experienced it, it's really hard. You know, I'm going to come into your firm, we're going to play a load of games, and you're going to pay me.
Yeah. Especially for, I can see how some modern organisations like the Googles of this world would be totally up for that kind of thing. But then some of the more traditional organisations like banks or old public sector organisations might, not completely understand the value of it unless someone who is within the training department has actually been through it themselves.
Yeah.
You've also organised a improv festival in Birmingham, haven't you?
I did. There's been three so far.
Okay.
And there hopefully will be another one next year.
Excellent. How did that all come about?
Much the same way as I put up the flyers. I went, we should have a festival. And so I started a festival. I asked people to come and perform. Year one was just a weekend and was mostly favours from other people in the improv network. And it went very well. Year two was bigger and lasted longer. And I managed to pay people some money, not a huge amount, but managed to pay them. Year three, we raised Arts Council funding.
Wow.
And so we were able to pay people properly. And it lasted 9 days. And it was at the Blue Orange Theatre and at Birmingham Rep. And managed to get in two of the top companies in the country, which is Ostentatious, who do improvised Jane Austen. I don't know if you've seen them.
No.
Well, they do exactly that, a brand new Jane Austen full-length show. And Showstopper, who do a full-length West End musical, complete with all the songs, the characters, the narrative arc, all improvised, quite stunning. And they played a show at Birmingham Rep as part of the festival.
I think I came to one of the shows, which was an improvised Shakespeare play.
Yes.
Which was absolutely excellent. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yep, they're called Impromptu Shakespeare.
Okay.
They're based down in Bristol, I believe, or maybe London, I can't remember. They improvise a new Shakespeare play every time. But funny. It's really funny stuff. Clever and funny. And they use the iambic pentameters and all the language as well.
Yeah, which is incredibly impressive to be able to put that together. So what's the plan for the future with the Improv Festival?
Well, so there was going to be one in 2019.
No,
that's right.
2020.
No, September 2019 there was going to be one.
Oh, right, okay.
Yep. And then, because that's when, no, wait a minute, let me get this. Yeah, because we lost all of 2020. It was going to be in 2019.
Okay.
And the threat of the pandemic was coming. And the Arts Council shut down and stopped all, because I was waiting for Arts Council funding, and they went, we're stopping. So we cancelled it. But it was going to be at Midlands Arts Centre. It had moved from the Blue Orange, which is traditionally where it had happened. Midlands Arts Centre said, yeah, come on board, let's do it here. And it got stopped. Didn't happen in 2019. Have I got this right? No, it was 2020, wasn't it?
The first lockdown was in March 2020.
Right, let me get this right. So we did a first festival was 2016.
Okay.
Second one was 2017. No, that's not going to work. Anyway, anyway, it didn't happen.
It doesn't matter.
I'm now talking to Midlands Arts Centre again, and we're hoping to do it in the autumn of 2022.
Oh, excellent.
Because it takes a year to put these things together. So we're just starting to talk now about putting some together for a year's time.
And how many shows do you think that will contain?
So last time there were 22 shows over 9 days. It'll be something like a week's worth of shows, plus some workshops and some bits and bobs.
So it's a bit like the Edinburgh Fringe Festival on a smaller scale.
But it's all improvised. All the shows are improv.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I would love to, it hasn't happened yet, but I'd love, for example, to get some maybe jazz involved as well, because that's an improvised form. Some contact dance. I don't know if you've come across it. Well, it's an improvised dance form. It's the same way people dance without knowing what they're going to be doing. So it would be really nice to expand into some other improvised formats.
Yeah, and I think that sounds like an excellent idea, and I hope that it continues to grow in the future, because I think that things like this happening, well, anywhere in the country is great, but I think it's particularly great in Birmingham, because Birmingham is really growing in terms of the diversity of the different entertainment that is put on and the creative arts that are provided. And it's things like this which really helps to... I'm not going to say put Birmingham on the map, because it's already on the map, but it helps to shine a brighter spotlight on the city, which is only a good thing.
It's interesting you should say put it on the map. That when I did my Arts Council application, I said I want to put Birmingham on the map to become the Edinburgh Festival of Improv.
Okay.
And hopefully an international festival. I managed to get, at the last one we did, a New York hip-hop improv company.
Oh, wow.
Who do narrative shows that break into hip-hop. They're amazing. They're called North Coast. And they use a live beatboxer who is astounding. Wow. And I would love to have more, attract more international companies to
come. So I know that improv is very big. It's Chicago, isn't it?
Yeah.
The big place. Do they have festivals in America, improv festivals
in
America?
Yes, they do. In a way... I don't want to get into the technicalities and the finances of it, but what's been unique about the Birmingham one? So performances tend not to make money, because you can only sell a limited number of tickets, and you've got to pay the performers, and you're never really going to cover their costs unless they work cheap. That's a bottom line, unless you've got a huge theatre. So most festivals are based around teaching. So you get top quality American, European, British teachers. You get improvisers coming all over who want to learn. It's workshops all day. And then as a bonus, they put on some shows in the evening, usually from the teachers themselves.
Oh, right. Okay.
That's the traditional festival model. What I did in Birmingham was focus on shows. And the only way I could do that was to get funding.
Okay.
So it's because we have an arts council in this country, America, there's no equivalent.
Oh, right.
I could get funding. But here's the interesting thing. The Arts Council don't fund improv, really, because they don't know what it is. It's not drama.
Oh, right.
It's not stand-up. It's not new writing. It's not combined arts. It's this weird thing. What I managed to get funding for is a festival. They do fund festivals, but they don't really fund improv at the moment, because it doesn't fit quite into any of the categories. But that's what's unique about the Birmingham Festival, that it's a performance festival, first and foremost.
And I think it's an excellent one. And best of luck to you for the future. I'm sure it must take a hell of a lot of organising, putting something like that together.
I used to have hair, and it wasn't white.
So now I would like to ask you what your tagline is for the episode, to summarise your experience of doing improv, your journey of doing improv. What is your tagline for the episode?
Well, can I cheat?
Yeah.
Because Improv Initiative already has a tagline on the business card and on the website.
Okay.
And it's simply because life is unscripted.
And I think that is an absolutely perfect tagline, well, for your business, but also for this episode. So, yeah, that was a nice, easy one for
yes.
you. So before we go, could we play one more game?
Okay. All right. It's another verbal game.
Okay.
I wasn't prepared for this, but okay. This is called Fortunately, Unfortunately. So I'm going to make a statement starting with the word fortunately.
Okay.
You're going to respond with unfortunately. I'm going to respond with fortunately. Doesn't matter. So you're always going to be the pessimist. I'm always going to be the optimist. It's nicer if there's more people, so you end up doing both.
Okay.
But we'll play it that way anyway.
So am I unfortunately?
You're always unfortunately. Okay. So whatever I present you with, you're going to present a negative twist to it.
Okay.
Okay? And we can't ignore anything that's already been said. So we're building always on what's already there. You can't just negate what's been said. So I will start with... Fortunately, I found a parking space right outside here tonight.
Unfortunately, it's covered with dog poo.
Fortunately, I love the smell of dog poo.
Unfortunately, it brings in seagulls to the area.
Fortunately, seagulls make excellent snacking if you cook them right.
Unfortunately, they have a nasty habit of exploding in the oven.
Fortunately, my oven is under warranty because it's fairly new.
Unfortunately, it's a warranty from Japan, which means I have to take the oven there myself.
Fortunately, the Olympics are on, so I get a chance to see them. And see, let's stop it there. So that's another typical game. So again, it's responding to each other, listening, and dreaming up stuff.
Okay. Lovely. Yeah, thanks for providing lots of entertainment in this podcast, and thanks for sharing your story about improv. And yeah, if anyone is interested in going along to any shows, or if anyone is interested in doing any of the workshops, or if they want you to come along for the business, I will leave links to all of those businesses in the description for the podcast and also on YouTube.
So just to be clear, for shows, go it's the Box of Frogs website. For workshops, it's the Birmingham Improv website. And for corporate stuff, it's the Improv Initiative website.
Okay, lovely. Thank you very much, John. It's been excellent to have you on here. It's been nice to see you again.
Been a pleasure. Thank you for playing along.
I hope you enjoyed that episode with John. Next week, we'll be speaking to Eamon, who has set up a business called Hive, which helps other businesses to manage their customer marketing activities. To make sure you don't miss out on that episode and all future content, please make sure you subscribe to the channel, and I will see you next time.